there's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
What is wrong with you tonight? I can't seem to say or do the right thing. Wanted to be sure you're feeling right. Wanted to be sure that we want the same thing. She said, I can't believe it. You can't possibly mean it. Don't we all want the same thing? Don't we? Who said anything about love? No, not love, she said. Don't you know that it's different, girl? Don't give me love. No, not love, she said. Don't you know that it's different for girls? You're all the same.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, to all four corners of the globe, on this bluish-green planet that you and I call our Earth. In all its glory, we podcast here from the P2 compound. Phil Pritchett, everyone, how are you doing? Great to be back with you. We have had many adventures here over the last week or two that we are going to get to today, and so much more. As we recount my recent trip through Arkansas and Tennessee as I stayed in Nashville, which I hadn't done for many years, saw some friends. I stayed there on a Tuesday night and sort of took the temperature of the Nashville country music and music industry environment through some good friends who have become quite large Nashville country music insiders. And then I was on to play a private party out in Maryville, Tennessee, just south of Knoxville, just almost a part of Knoxville, Tennessee out there, for my good friend Jeff King and his wife Elizabeth, having a surprise birthday party for her out there. A big old fun, great private party out there that all of you should take note out there and email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Let me know and say, hey, Phil, I hear you out playing private parties for all your fans out there and friends. Please do so. Email me or call me, 817-733-5256. Well, it's always interesting when I go driving in the old van. I want to thank Richard Marshall, you know of whom I speak, the 7-foot-tall guy, now making his way into the full band at times. Blue's brother, you all know and love Blue, they've been the bass player in the full band for many, many years. Well, his friend, younger brother Richard, has moved down to town. He has sat in on keys, mandolin, and contributed to some shows with the full band, most notably at Rudy's wedding. How you doing out there, Rudy? Rudy got married. He's the tall guy with the big hair on all the YouTube Phil Pritchett cool and unusual punishment videos that are out there. Look at him as he once was. I'm glad to report he hasn't changed much, man. Having a great time. We wish him all the happiness in the world, of course. Love playing the private party. So Richard was on for that show, played keys there. He played keys at the recent full band show at the Tap. And some other shows, and he's played bass at a few shows, as he did the other night at the White Elephant, the last couple White Elephant shows here in Fort Worth. Richard Marshall, love to have him around. But he also is the proud owner of a Toyota Prius.
Yes.
The Toyota Prius. You know, I'm always suspicious of these battery-powered hybrid-type vehicles. But I'm telling you what, I'm always... I always lament on these long road trips the gas-guzzling van. It's always I'm always torn between them. On a recent trip, I went out to play at the barbecue place out there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I rented a Hyundai Elantra from your friendly neighborhood Enterprise Rent-A-Car and drove it out there, and it was fantastic. I mean, you're getting 40 miles a gallon. It was a solo gig, so I just had like an amp and a couple of guitars. Enjoyed it thoroughly. And ever since then, I guess that was like 2011, I guess, a year or two ago. Ever since then, man, I have kind of been on notice for the high value mileage vehicle. You know, I travel a lot, but I do a lot without the band, without having to take drums and amps. You know, I drive to Houston, Corpus, all of our places, Nashville, sometimes by myself, you know, just to do an acoustic gig or to have a meeting or that kind of thing. So I don't know. I am holding on, of course. I'll always have a van of some type, some large vehicle to carry all the gear in. And Richard was nice enough to offer me his Prius to go to Nashville. But alas, I turned it down. Golly, I'm pathetically old school. I don't know. I'm out there with the big trucks, and Richard was kind enough to offer. It was by no, I hope I didn't insult him by turning it down. He's like, I'll take the Prius, man. You'll get better gas mileage. I was just like, I don't know. You don't want to do if it breaks down and insurance and all this kind of stuff. And man, I'm telling you, dude, I've never seen so many trucks, 18-wheelers in my life than driving to Tennessee last week. Good grief, man. Unbelievable traffic out there. But it does my heart well. Industry, the country, moving forward, grinding ahead. You know, everywhere you read is that the country's all going to hell and nobody's working. Man, I go out there, everyone's driving and hauling and just grinding ahead. So, as was I last week. Well, man, it's always with a heavy heart that I get in my van and head east. Now, if it's to Dallas, that's different, but... those of you listening to this program know that I have a great affinity for the West. Texas, Fort Worth is just, you know, the gateway to the West, right? The beginning of the West or something like that. If I drive west from here, Abilene, Lubbock, Amarillo, further on, Colorado, New Mexico. I feel at home out there. And I regret to say I never feel quite as at home going east. I also feel at home in Oklahoma, Kansas, up that direction. I enjoy South Texas, of course, going down 35. You love going to New Braunfels, Austin, San Antonio, Houston. Straight east from here, I'm not saying I don't like it. I just do not, how should I put this? I don't get into Arkansas or get into Louisiana and just think, man, this is my country here. This is what I'm familiar with. I feel right at home out here. Am I alone in that? I hope I'm not offending anyone from Louisiana. It's not that I don't like it. It's warm and swampy and it's just got a different vibe to it, the Southeast, than really what I used to. So I think for me, man, Texas, at least, not East Texas, of course. I think folks out there in, Beaumont and Nacogdoches, Lufkin, probably do feel a great affinity with Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. It is the East. But that sort of seals it for me. I'm too old to change now, for crying out loud. But I just realized that, man, as I head east, it's not that I don't enjoy it. It's beautiful. The people are great. I don't feel as at home as I do. Maybe that means I'm more of a Westerner. We're all Texans, but even more than that, I'm more of a Westerner. Does that make any sense? Anyway, one of the many thoughts I had driving 13 hours to Knoxville last week. Oh, you know the worst part about driving out of this great state of ours? Let me tell you what, too. As if you need to be told, Texas, we take it so for granted living here. You know, you hop on the road. We got to go to Houston. You get on 45. You're stopping at Bucky's. You're stopping at the check stop on 35. You're stopping everywhere. Driving. If there's a wreck or a lane closure, you're redirected. Maybe there's two lanes this way, this way. You go, you know, a lot of times, how many arguments have we had with the band? How many discussions in the van? Like, do we stay on the highway or do we get off? You know, 9 times out of 10, I stay on, and I'm usually always proven correct. The traffic does continue. There's a lot of guys jumping the median, getting over on the access road. But more often than not, we pick up speed, get back to 70 miles an hour. My band's laughing. Phil never drives 70 miles an hour. You're right. I get back up, get the van back up to 54 miles an hour. And we're off again, and I look over. What do I see on the right? I see a long line of cars on the access road sitting helplessly at an intersection at some traffic light. But that's how it rolls in Texas, man. But let me tell you what, when you get outside of Texas, oh my gosh. I wouldn't include Oklahoma in this as much, but man, Arkansas and Tennessee, for certain, and Louisiana, dude, the highways and everything just take a dive. The road quality. Poorer states, to be sure. And it's not so much that, I guess. I was trying to determine this because let me tell you what happens when you get into Arkansas and there's a wreck ahead of you or a lane closure. What you do is you sit there and idle. Motionless, you understand, for 15, 20 minutes. Then you see a couple guys ahead just turn off their car and just kind of get out and just kind of be walking around in the median, just stretching. You're kind of throwing up their hands in disgust. So I turn off my car. I get out. Of course, I've already been punching the ceiling. Just, what the heck's going on? That happens. Man, I lived in Nashville, you know, for a year or so. And this happened all the time, just driving through. I'm like, gosh, how come we're just stopped cold? Well, you really take a look around. Let me tell you, when you're standing in the median on a interstate in Arkansas, you take note of your surroundings quite clearly. And what you see is this. You see the interstate itself is well paved, it's well maintained, but what you don't see is wide shoulders. They scrimp on that asphalt, you understand. It's a little tighter. And also, most importantly, you do not have access roads. It's shocking. When you really look, you're like, man, there's not just another road. We take that so for granted in Texas. You got the interstate, then you kind of look next to the interstate and there's like the old interstate. I mean, just a two-lane road just, you know, running through down 35 or down 20 or down 45. There's just a whole nother road over there that if something gets real bad, you can just pull off on and drive on it. And the reason it is it's open terrain and there are businesses scattered up and down these interstates. Man, you get into Arkansas, not only is there no terrain. Usually you're walled off by pine trees. There's huge, thick forest on either side of the road that would probably be very expensive to clear and build businesses. And just that, there's just not businesses. So you get between these cities, you cross in from Texarkana. Man, from there to Little Rock, it's pretty tight, man. I mean, so if some 18-wheeler jackknifes or some, there's road construction, they just have signs that say, be prepared to stop. Be prepared to stop. I'm thinking, I'm on the interstate. Why should I be prepared to stop? I mean, when was the last time, out of the thousands of times I've driven to Corpus or Houston or Lubbock or Nacogdoches, just on 45, just come over the hill, there's some traffic. Well, you just stay in your car. You might crawl along for 15, 20 minutes. Or you're like, oh, man, I'll get on the access road. I don't know. You sit through the light. But you keep moving. I don't know if I could ever recall sitting on 35 in Hillsboro or somewhere and just throwing up my hands, shutting off the engine, and just getting out of the car and sharing my disgust with my fellow motorists in the grassy median of Interstate 35. Have y'all ever had that experience? I mean, I've lived here and played music and traveled like hell for a long, long time. But man, every darn time I go through Arkansas or Tennessee, this is the fate. You know, there's always going to be some construction. There's going to be some accident or somebody broken down. And when that happens, dude, the whole thing collapses. There's nowhere to go. You can't go in the trees. No access road. So it was here I found myself both on the way there outside of Little Rock and then outside of Memphis on the way back, just standing around enjoying a decent day, standing around in the grass of the interstate system, wondering and wishing that I was back in Texas, where we get our highways and our travel and our business and our movability, where we get it so right, folks. It'd be hard to make a living in these other states, man, with those highways shut down all the time. Crikey. So there I was out there, but oh, thank goodness all was safe. All was well. I arrived in Nashville late Tuesday night on my way to Knoxville to play Jeff King. Remember Jeff King, man? The Notorious Gringos had all those great songs from North Carolina. You remember me and Kurt South talking about going all the way to North Carolina to play a bunch of gigs out there. I took the full band out there one time. We're all out there playing Jeff King, our good friend and fearless leader of the Notorious Gringos, his party out there, Crawfish Boil, King Fest. Well, Jeff's moved around. He's now in Knoxville, Tennessee. So he's invited me up for a play a private show and to sit in with the reuniting Notorious Gringos for the birthday party for his wife, Elizabeth. Surprise party. Oh, man. So I knew it was going to be great fun, and I was thrilled that it was on a Wednesday night so I could do it. It'd be hard to take 2 or 3 days on a weekend. All my weekends are kind of booked. But so I struck out Tuesday. So Tuesday night, I spent the night with my stayed in the cozy confines of my friend Matt Adams, my attorney, industry attorney and friend. I stayed at his house in Nashville. We go out to dinner to Hattie B's Spicy Chicken. That's what they eat in Nashville, the hot chicken. God, when I was there, it was Mr. Booze. You had to eat Mr. Booze. It's like an entire chicken that's been, they pluck the feathers and they just take the entire chicken and they just throw it into a deep fat fryer for like a little while. And they bring it out and then it's glazed in this pink, orange, red sauce that if you don't wipe your hands a lot, will start to gradually eat away at the skin on your fingers. Hot chicken. This is what they do. So I'm in for it, but it was very, very good. We meet my old guitar-playing friend, Chris Graffanino, great session player, joins us. He played with my friend Wes Cunningham for a long time and a lot of recordings and things like that. So Graffy came out, Maddie Adams, music attorney. Maddie's the head attorney at Sony Nashville. And Jim Beavers, who I've written a few really fun songs with through the years. When I left Nashville in 2000, Jim was just a guy. He was just, pounding around, working at labels. He worked at Virgin. He worked at Capitol. But he finally, his brother Brett Beavers, produced a young guy named Dierks Bentley, who cut some of the Beavers brothers' songs. And Jim Beavers, man, he co-wrote Red Solo Cup, man. Check the credits. So that thing's been paying well. He also wrote the Gary Allen song, Watching Airplanes. And I think that was the number one hit, if I'm not mistaken. So Jim's just been a great friend through all the years and has had a lot of songwriting success of late. But Jim and Maddie and Graffanino, I can always expect a good realistic analysis of the music business. So I like to come into Nashville. I hadn't been there in a long time. And just sort of gauge the temperature and, see what these guys are kind of, hey, what's challenging the business? What's going on, from an outsider's perspective. Not that I'm in that world much or think about it a whole lot, but it's always fascinating to me. So I've been out at the front. I'm back with the news. So we're sitting there at Hattie B's eating hot spicy chicken, sweating, guzzling beer. And man, the men were downcast, might I say. Quite downcast indeed. The thing they've got working against them, Maddie and Jim, who are about my age, is they remember the glory days, man, the 90s Nashville, where Garth would sell 10 million, 15 million albums. Alan Jackson, I mean, just think of the millions and millions Shania Twain and the George Strait would sell product, physical product. There was an industry, man. You made CDs. You had to go shop songs. Artists would record songwriter songs. And there was a huge, huge industry of publishers and songwriters and studios and producers and people all working together to get those 10 songs on the CD. And then when that CD sold a million or 10 million or 20 million or God knows what, the royalties would just come trickling in, flooding in some cases. Through ASCAP and BMI, performance royalties played on the radio to the hit songwriters. But even if you didn't get a cut, but a single off the new Garth record, you go, well, I'm just song number 7. It was never a single. But man, you're talking, potentially, I feel several million copies, maybe making a couple hundred grand or so just on mechanical royalties paid by the label as the product sold. Well, this is the tough backdrop that the music business, country music and the music business as a whole, the old school music business, I should say, finds itself up against now. The town is ruled with an iron fist by a couple of artists who show they can still record a song and have it downloaded a lot on iTunes. That runs the business. Of course, there is no physical product. It is just all about writing a song that could potentially be a single and then getting it to someone who can get it on the radio. That's the business. But think about it. That's a very small, minutely small group of artists who can achieve that. You know, there's just not a ton of artists out there that sell, you know, any significant amount of music. So your Carrie Underwoods, your Jason Aldean's, and these folks, you know, of course, they all want to write, quote unquote, themselves, so they get that money. You know, when they get iTunes sales, they're paid as a, you know, publisher or a writer also. So it is rare, dude, that you have an artist, you know, like George Strait, who played other people's material. And some of that material might have been written by one guy. And that one guy would make a lot of money writing that song. So now you've got very few people in town with publishing deals. In fact, Jim Beavers told me, he said, man, there's like 50%, like 40% of people in town, of writers that have publishing deals, down from where it was like 10 years ago. It's just astounding. I mean, you know, even 10 years ago, people would pay writers sign no publishing deal, pay them, you know, $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month as an advance on their future income, trying to get their songs recorded. Well, man, the business just so many of those guys went broke. They just never recouped any of those advances. And so now you've got a very small cadre of writers that, you know, that those big acts will say, oh, I'm kind of interested in what he's doing or writing with him or something like that. And then there's just everybody else, you know. You know, Taylor Swift, of course, figures prominently in there. She's one that everybody's trying to get to as well. Another big piece of news from Jim and Maddie is just and also Jordan Powell, my old friend, my old road manager. I had coffee with him the following morning at Fido down there in the village, the old coffee shop on a rainy morning. Great to see Jordan. Jordan has left Miranda Lambert's operation. He started his own management company. He's got an office there on Music Row, managing Will Hoag and other fine acts. We wish him much success. But Jordan was telling me a lot of the same things that Jim was talking about, and Maddie, that man, ASCAP and BMI, the companies that monitor and distribute funds on radio play, have dried up, have gone down like 40%, or are 40% of what they were. Man, that is just a colossal drop. I'm kind of taking them at their word there, but their word is gold to me. Think about that. I mean, Powell illustrated it this way. He said, man, I knew somebody who had a top 10 cut. This man's a top 3 song or something like that. Wow, we're going to be getting just the writer royalty BMI check coming in through the door is going to be like 150, 180 grand over a year, something like that. That's been standard for, I don't know, the last, you know, 20, 30 years or something like that, some scale there. And just all of a sudden, man, just in the last 2 years, they just go, man, it's not going to be 150. It's going to be like, you know, 80. He's like, 80? What? You know, I mean, just, which, hey, you and I are saying, hey, man, that's still a lot of money for writing music. That's what I say. But, man, if you're used to, you know, being 150, that's a shock to the system, man. You can imagine there's always top 10 hits. There's always the charts. There's always songs getting that radio play. So just think of that industry, man, throwing off those $150,000 checks for top songs to writers. Of course, the publishers are getting $150,000 as well. So you're talking about a lot of money being thrown off in years past. And man, if you reduce that by half or so, you're going to have a lot of little cute, interesting buildings on Music Row with a studio in the basement that are empty. You're going to have a lot of guys flowing out of town, you know, going back home to work for dad or sell shoes or go back to law school or something. And that's how it is. Although, as Jim says, they keep falling off the turnip truck every day, man. just dudes showing up with their spiky hair and tattoos and leather armbands just falling off the truck, ready to be the next big thing, man, ready to co-write with all the big shots, to hang out in all the songwriter bars and make it in the music business. They're still there. Hey, I was one of them at one time, minus the armbands and the tattoos. But, yeah, man, so not a whole lot of encouraging forward-looking news on that front. Of course, this whole podcast is built around this premise of the changing music business. No one pretending to know where it's going, but at least acknowledging the changes. You know, it's not unlike we were talking about at dinner at the hot chicken place. Travel agencies. I mean, pre-internet, you'd call a travel agent. You wouldn't know one thing about hotels in Hawaii or what there is to do for fun or, you know, what was considered a good deal or a bad deal. Tell me where to go. I've heard of this one hotel, but someone said, you don't want to stay there. There's no reviews. There's nowhere to research anything. So you had to go to a travel agent, for crying out loud. Hire a travel agent. Go to a travel agency. Well, where are those travel agencies now? We're all a travel agent. They don't exist. It's just like, well, how can that be? An entire industry, Phil, the music business, how can it just go away? Well, as Jim Beavers and Maddie Adams can attest, it can. And it does, and it will. Maddie says in Sony Records, there's just kind of a dry vibe in the whole thing. You know, they got this, I don't know, big building with a few floors of offices and things, but you know, a lot of times there's just kind of a few interns shuffling some papers. And, you know, Maddie's doing all the lawyer stuff. He goes, man, I'm working to the gate. He goes, I get everything. I don't have a lot of help or assistance. I mean, just the budgets are so tight. I do everything. You know, my boss is down the hall in a corner office, and there's a couple of interns. He goes, man, there's just a lot of floor space, man. A lot of empty offices, a lot of places where there used to be desks and people. And a guy, I used to joke with Jim when in 2000, in 1998-99, having quote-unquote meetings in Nashville. What did that mean, man? That meant you went to these houses and you said, oh, man, I have a meeting with this guy. He's at Warner. He's at Sony. Well, man, who are these guys? Well, they were just, I don't know, industry insiders. The industries could support these guys. They were connective dudes. You go into some office. There he is. Hey, man, Phil, what's going on, man? And in his desk, he has a stack of like 20 CDs on his desk that he's maybe been listening to. He's got a Sports Illustrated and a putter leaning in the corner. And that's his office. That's what he's got. You kind of open the drawer of his desk, and there's just a pencil in there kind of rolling around. Kind of like that scene in the Hudsucker Proxy, the Coen Brothers movie nobody saw, but there was just no there. It was just, but yet there was so much money in the industry. They hired people they liked. And, you know, it was just kind of this big old fun thing, this whole industry. Well, man, all those guys are gone, Jim was saying. He goes, all those just middle management dudes are gone. He goes, you've got people working for free who come out of music school getting experience in the business. And then you got a couple lawyers and a couple of true executives. And that's it, man. And that's all there is. The music's recorded. It's kind of put out in some form on iTunes, Spotify, and they all wait and hope. And that's it. And hope that Carrie Underwood's manager calls him back, or Taylor Swift's, or whoever. So it's a tough time, man, in Nashville. But those guys, Maddie and Jim, they're hanging in there, writing some songs, both of them counting their blessings, admittedly saying, I'm in a good situation because I've been around and got some good placements. But both of them are very, very open about, man, who knows? You know, I mean, who knows in a couple years if any of this is even going to exist? You know, what happens if Kenny Chesney goes, you know what, I'm just going to, you know, record my basement and put it on iTunes and keep all the money? I mean, as soon as he does that, who knows what the future is going to be? Who knows what the business will look like. I suspect there are always going to be some buildings up there that, sign people and are able to maybe, you know, promote artists and stuff. But it might be very, very, very small and very, very few. And you're going to see more and more guys that just are out there touring and putting out music. Just kind of keep all that stuff to themselves, man. Just say, hey, you know, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and keep control, keep all the money. And it'll be interesting. We will be following that. Of course, as we are wont to do. Well, man, we went on the next day, me in the car, astounded by the beauty of Eastern Tennessee, especially. Man, have you been through Eastern Tennessee? That drive between Nashville and Knoxville? Oh, just, I mean, rolling hills of trees and horses and just deep, crystal clear rivers flowing under the highway. Just beautiful country. Just beautiful, beautiful. That was probably the highlight of my trip outside of playing that night, was the drive that afternoon. We'd had some storms, and the rain was kind of letting up. Just some coffee driving through Eastern Tennessee, winding my way through the Smoky Mountains to Knoxville, to actually Maryville, south of Knoxville. Played a solo set myself, had some barbecue with Jim, Jeff King and Doug and Russell and Tommy and all the guys from the Notorious Gringos, who I hadn't seen in a few years. So we played all their fun songs, bunch of covers, and then you know how I love to just sit in with the next band. We had this, man, we played this venue, Smoky Mountain Harley Davidson. It's a motorcycle distributorship. It's really cool. Then they got this shed behind there that's all tricked out. It's this huge bar and a nice, cool, intimate listening room. Great stage, great PA gear. They got a Hammond C3 organ in there with a Leslie House drum kit, backline bass rig. You know, it looked like, you know, Ray Wiley Hubbard, and a lot of Texas guys play there. Hayes Carl and Reckless Kelly. I saw their posters everywhere from years past. Todd Snyder. So it's kind of a cool Texas kind of outpost. So who knows, man? Perhaps the full band and I can make it up there for some shows here in the upcoming years, because it certainly was very, very cool. Loved the room, loved the company, loved the venue. Played my solo acoustic set. Then I got to strap on the old Strat and just sit in on the Gringos thing. Played a bunch of covers, had a ball, got to go over and play organ, play keys on a couple songs. Just had a blast, man. And just got up, you know, the next day and just trucked it all the way home. I don't know, 13 hours or so, standing out in the median with my coffee, bitching about the construction with everybody else, with all the truckers, man. It was a great bonding experience. But let me tell you what, man, when I come over that big hill, you know, I kind of have this thing about stopping in Arkansas. I always get gas in Jackson, Tennessee, before I get to Memphis, and I get gas in Texarkana. That's it, and that gets me through the trip, and then I don't have to get out of my car in Arkansas. No offense to Arkansas. It's a nice state. It's just, man, I broke down when I was moving home from Nashville. Moving truck broke down in Little Rock or in Arkadelphia. Spent the night in Arkadelphia with all my possessions in a truck, moving van. Had to move all the stuff out of one moving van budget into another budget moving van. Think about that, dude. Rolling a refrigerator in the pouring rain into another truck. Swapping the load, they call it. Swapping the load. Make jokes among yourselves. So that's what we did, man, way back in the day. And ever since then, I just go, man, if I can get through Arkansas without stopping, I have this mental thing that clicks in, like, oh, yes, it's a good trip. Yes, yes. So that's what I did, man. Always great to see Texarkana coming out of Arkansas. You just feel like, oh, the road opens up. There's places to eat and get gas and get coffee, and there's just cattle grazing. I'm just like, oh, thank God. Home again. Sweet, sweet home. Well, folks, I want to thank everybody out there for putting a few bucks in the tip jar, man. I mentioned we do have the this podcast is not brought to you by sponsors and commercials. You just listen to it at your will, at your leisure. And if you feel the need, on the podcast, p2podcast.com page over to the left, there is a little PayPal thing. You can shoot me a few bucks or something like that. As many of you do so often, I'd appreciate it. I hope you get my emails I send you in thanks. If you do that, be prepared for Phil to type you a little answer, a little email saying, hey, man, thanks for the heads up and for the little bit of cash to keep it all rolling. It's much appreciated. And thank you all for listening to the P2 Podcast. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me 817-733-5256 to come record at the studio. Producing so much these days. Trinidad World Recording in full effect, or a Book the Full Band. We'll come play for you solo, duo, trio, even a four-piece now with Richard on keys, man. Anywhere. Look at us. We drove to freaking Knoxville, Tennessee, for crying out loud. We'll go anywhere, man. We'll make the deal work. Let us book your private party and come play for you. Well, thanks a lot, folks. Great to be back with you. That's the report from Tennessee and from the front lines of the music business in Nashville. Hope you found it useful in your daily life. Stay tuned, everybody, to next week when we see you right here again. Be good to each other out there. See you next time. Much tougher.
You're all the same. You're all the same. You're all the same. You're all the same. You're all the same.